Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 678, and we're recording it on Thursday, April 7th, 2022. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry, and of course, where those two intersect. That's our topic. And joining me to talk about those things and others, perhaps, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon. Oh, no, sorry. Good morning, Mr. Spriggs. Wow. Very first thing I said, and I managed to not get that right. It's morning. It's a lovely day, and the intersection for me right now is in beautiful Pewaukee, Wisconsin. So I am lucky to be broadcasting today from the Synod headquarters, the Center for Mission and Ministry. I'm actually sitting in your office, Martin.
Yeah, and I'm not. It's odd, huh? That'd be too complicated that we were both in the same place at the same time. But yeah, I try and record from my home office. It's just a little bit quieter and the equipment is all set up. I don't have to tear down and set up and such. So that's my normal schedule whenever that day is. And this happens to be another Thursday where we're recording Wells Tech, just how that happens once in a while. And you're headed back to Minnesota today, aren't you?
Right. Wish me
weather
well.
Weather permitting.
I've had my share of driving fun as this small town girl now came to the big city and had to get reacclimated to traffic and people going 60 everywhere I look. And so I'm ready to go back to quiet Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, I was in Florida last week and boy, I really appreciate the traffic up here because the traffic down there is horrendous.
Aggressive.
I do not know. And not just aggressive, just the road system has not kept up with the number of houses they're building. Everybody's moving to Florida. And boy, it is just real frustrating. It takes a long time to get anywhere. So the roads by themselves are in much better shape than here in the north. I appreciated that part, but you're going so slowly over them that you lose some of that appreciation.
Well, I'm glad you had a nice trip. Hopefully some R&R time in your camping luxury.
Yeah, we took our camper down. Saw my mom, showed her the camper. That was one of the reasons we wanted to go down there. We had not seen my mom since before COVID. Mm. So that was really nice to spend time with her, and saw my sister as well. And that was weather was perfect, 85 to 90 every day. Just really enjoyed that time.
Got a little tan in the process, I see.
Yeah, not too much. Yeah, try and watch my skin these days, but at least that's what my dermatologist says I should do.
Smart man.
Anyway, so we're back at it, and after a little bit of R&R, I'm really excited to jump back into technology and ministry topics, and this one in particular that we'll be focusing on today, and that's web excellence, and that's something that I think every Wells organization, ELS organization, religious organization does have to pay attention to, because the web is still kind of the primary way you get your message across. It's the thing that you have the most control over, social media. You control your web presence, what you put on there, what the experience is. And a lot of our churches and schools, I think, struggle with that. You know, they struggle for people to manage it, how to put a good presence on the web, and the steps to take and the things to consider. But fortunate for us, we just hired a new web developer on our staff here at the CMM. So we thought we'd tap his expertise to share some of the things that he sees and has seen, because he's gone through this exact process. In fact, at your home congregation, right, Sally?
That's right.
Former home congregation.
Yeah, right? From Christ the Lord there in Brookfield, Wisconsin. And what a blessing to have someone with that kind of talent in your congregation. Make sure you find out if you have those people in your congregation, because as our interviewee, Tim Sinclair, demonstrates, there's plenty to think about when you're working on a church website.
Yeah. So let's take a listen to the interview that we had just a couple of days ago with Tim Sinclair. Welcoming to the show this week, Tim Sinclair, our newest team member, a web developer. We're really happy to have Tim on board and felt it would be good to have him talk a little bit about the web development experience from a congregation's perspective. Typically, that's a challenging area, I think, for a lot of our churches and schools, mm-hmm. and Tim has some experience there. So before we jump into that conversation, tell us a little bit about yourself, Tim, background, and what you do.
Sure. My favorite topic is myself, so I appreciate that, the opportunity. I graduated from WLC in 2001, received my first job offer back in Florida through a distant connection. Back in St. Pete, Florida, at a firm called Fusion Creative. Actually starting out just doing graphic design, and then I kind of brought some of the web development services to them. And that kind of started to build from there. 2005, I started my own firm down there. My brother came along about a year later, and we did that all the way for the last, how many years is that now? 17 years doing that. So, and worked with a lot of large national kind of brands, but the bulk of our client base was small to medium sized businesses. Did a lot of church and school websites, law firms, doctors, medical practices, things like that. I bring that up because some of these larger brands often, I've worked with Smith & Nephew, Budweiser, Milwaukee Brewers, Tampa International Airport, things like that. I really enjoyed the smaller business model much better, particularly the not-for-profit organizations. You really get to know the businesses better. Mm-hmm. You get to know the people better. They're much more engaged in what they're doing. You're not out on an island. Sometimes with the larger brands, you're a deckhand. You come in, you do a job, and then you're kicked out, and that's just you chew you up, spit you out type of thing. But you develop relationships with these smaller organizations, and good friendships and things like that. So that was the bulk of our business, and that's really what I enjoyed doing. So came on board, moved back up here in 2016, got involved in a Wells Church up here, and I guess I should tell you a little bit about my personal life. My wife, I'm married, I have three children. They would kill me if I didn't mention them, Elliot, Miles, and Ava. But they're all in school at Christ the Lord here in Brookfield.
Very nice. Yeah. What was attractive to Wells to make you give up the family-run business and come work for us?
Being connected more directly to the ministry was really, it's something my parents have been involved in ministry for their entire careers, being Christian school educators. So that is something I guess perhaps innately or inherently was kind of built into my psyche. Okay. I really wanted to use my talents and gifts, not that they weren't being used to glorify the Lord, sure. In the secular marketplace. But I really felt like I had something to contribute, and the position came available, and just got excited about the prospect of working directly with the ministry. So I think that was really the big thing for me.
Great.
We're certainly excited to have you here, fellow member at Christ the Lord. That's really special too. And I love the Christ the Lord website. I still follow Christ the Lord, even though we've moved away now. And you were definitely involved in the relaunching of the Christ the Lord website. Yeah. Maybe talk through where you start. What are some of the considerations if a congregation is looking to do the same thing with their site?
Right. So, specifically with Christ the Lord, and this is a challenge I think that could be a little bit different depending on the situation that a church finds itself in. But at Christ the Lord, they had an existing website, and their ministry was, in terms of Wells Church size, was pretty thriving, right? A lot of Wells churches, particularly outside, the cradle of Wells civilization in southeastern Wisconsin, they're smaller churches. And so there are different challenges that face small congregations as opposed to larger, more established ones. And so Christ the Lord was a little larger, a little more established, but their web presence was not. Mm-hmm. They had basically through volunteers who didn't have any real exposure to the technical side of web design or development, donated their time and used kind of off-the-shelf tools to put things together. And the site kind of reflected, you know, maybe, you know, some of the pitfalls that are common to that type of a development environment. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, a lot of it was just inquiring about what didn't work, what did, what wasn't on the site that needed to be. Talking about who you are as a church in a congregation, what your role in the community and what you offer that's different from other churches in the area is very important. So that we took a lot of time discussing that, planning, thinking through those things. And then this is another big one, you know, determining who's going to provide content,
right?
Who's going to maintain the content after a site launches. That's death for a lot of websites. You go out and say, oh, I'm going to have a news and announcements, I'm going to have calendar events and this and that, but then somebody isn't there to maintain it and keep it fresh. And that's the kiss of death for visitors to go to a site and say, oh, this hasn't been updated for 8 months. I'm never going back here for any information. So those are all very important considerations, and those are the kind of the challenges that faced Christ the Lord was what are we going to put on it and who's going to continue to maintain this over time?
So what are the goals? What were the goals, primary goals for the redesign? It wasn't just, you know, to spruce things up. You wanted to think about the intended audience and what you wanted out of the site. What was Christ the Lord's reason for doing that, and what did you come up with?
So at the time, and the site actually launched in 2018, so it's been up for about 4 years now. We started working on it in 2017. And at that time, the Christ the Lord didn't actually have a visual identity. They didn't have a logo. Okay. They were using a logo from a capital campaign and then just slapping on the words Christ the Lord Lutheran Church in school. So they had come to me after I had been a member there for about a year and knowing my background, and also brought in a couple of other graphic designers in the congregation to kind of form a committee to look at developing a visual brand identity. And as we were releasing that, it seemed to be natural, because the website was in need of development, to kind of piggyback that with that and introduce those things mm-hmm. at the same time. So that was kind of the impetus to the whole thing initially. But as we worked through the site, it was about simplifying the navigation, right? So the previous site was, and you see this a lot, where you have a main navigation and
everything
goes in the main navigation. Right.
Yes.
There's no concept of internal linking.
Right.
Everything has to be in the main navigation. So you get long drop-down menus with 20 items in them and leading to a page with just three sentences on it. That type
good.
Of thing. Right. Well, no, it's a laborious experience for visitors to do that. So the idea ultimately for us is, and at Christ the Lord, is they have a Christian elementary school, and they're very involved with one another. The church supports the school supports the church. They really wanted to tie the church ministry and the school ministry together visually, and kind of divide the site up, tie them together visually, but divide the content up into, you know, separate sections of the site. Whereas prior to that, it was just a big menu, and you know, you had to kind of hunt and peck, you know, for your information.
Sure.
They wanted to integrate keyword search. They wanted to incorporate live streaming. So there were some other things too, but those were kind of the main points of you know, the redesign in terms of goals.
I like it that you ask what was missing. That's really a great place to start, and, you know, mm-hmm. what's next.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a lot of our viewers maybe are in that position. They're mm-hmm. trying to figure out where to go or what to redesign, yeah. what steps to take. I heard kind of a key component maybe is to start a committee, not just make it
Absolutely.
One person's responsibility. What else would you recommend for folks getting started?
So I would say the number one problem that I often see is people jumping right into design. That's the first thing. When, you know, whenever I meet with clients, almost always come to the table with things they like. And it's usually not content driven. It's usually the visuals. Mm-hmm. People like the way something looks. And that's important. Mm-hmm. But I always remind people that nobody ever comes back to your site just to look at it. They might go there for the first time to see what you did.
Right.
But when was the last time you went to a website just because you thought it was well designed? It doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Content has to drive the planning. You need to plan your site. You need to talk to people. You need to say, what's missing from the site? What can't you find? What are you going to the site for, and what isn't there? And oftentimes people, you know, if you talk to a pastor who has been working there for a while, they'll have answers for you on that right away, because people are very vocal about what isn't working for them. So sometimes you don't even have to do that legwork. It's already there. But you do need to spend time planning, and you need to see it from the user's perspective. Don't think about it in terms of what do I want people to know about me or my church. Think about what do users want to know about me and my church. That way you're not stuck telling them what you think you might be or what you might want to be someday.
Right.
You need to tell them what you are now. When people come to your site, they need to get a sense of who you are so that they're not disappointed when they come to your church. Wells Lutheran churches tend to be on the smaller side of things, but there are good reasons for that. A lot of people are looking for smaller churches. We need to think of that as a strength,
sure,
not as a weakness. Don't try to compete with the Baptist mega church down the road. They have a different
right.
target market. Oftentimes the people that are members of Wells churches are not going to be happy in that. They're looking for small. They're looking for a place where there's somebody at the congregation and can get involved.
So don't try to appear to be bigger than you are.
Exactly. Right. Don't think, well, we're so small and we only have this number of programs.
Right.
Some people really are looking for that. My family is a case in point, you know, coming from the Bible Belt of Florida, where mega churches are on every street corner. Mm-hmm. It was very, very difficult to get involved. And we really missed the smaller Wells
sure.
church, Orthodox worship. Your worship style is very important. Be true to who you are. Don't try to be something you're not. You won't convert visitors to members that way.
How do you translate that objective or goal into a website design? What kinds of things can you do to help somebody experience that?
Well,
get to know you.
Yeah, so I think ultimately, well, I'll go back to Christ the Lord, and one of the things we did, in terms of a Wells congregation, a healthy size congregation, that the site needed to serve the members in terms of information, what's going on,
okay.
Calendar of events, news and updates, things like that. But we also wanted to keep a focus on outreach and, you know, potential new visitors and converting them to members. So part of our main navigational structure was simply having an I'm new button at the top of the mm-hmm. page, so that when people go there, they know exactly where to go to get kind of the big 30,000-foot picture. What do I do with my kids during worship? You know, are they welcome in the service?
Mm-hmm.
What are your service times? A link for driving directions. You know,
sure.
Those types of things are readily available and at their fingertips. So
mm-hmm.
Planning for thinking about your visitors, your users, who's going to be coming there, and then tailoring your main navigation, not one, you know, not having long lists of menus, but determining those things that people need to know from where they're coming from, putting those first front and center, and not so much about flashy graphics or motion graphics
mm-hmm.
and things that might tickle the eyes, but ultimately they fall short when it comes to people finding the content that they really
sure.
need.
Sure. So those are some good things to do. What about things to avoid?
The first thing I had come up with, is starting out and developing a website based on a style or a look and feel or flashy this and that. On the web nowadays, it's very hard to impress people. You know, you're competing with very advanced technologies that mm-hmm. people are using every day on their phones. Don't think that a slider... A big slideshow on your homepage is going to make you look more impressive to people. It isn't, you know. Focus on the content first. Develop your navigation based on what your users are looking for. And don't try to compete with the people around you emphasize your strengths. In addition to that, I see this happen a lot, is resorting to the what's quick and easy in terms of maintaining your site or your information. A lot of people resort to, well, social media is so easy. Let's put a link to Facebook, and I'll just update our Facebook page, and that will be our website. You know, and the website can sit out there, and it can kind of, you know, it might have you know, tumbleweeds blowing across the screen when people go there because it never gets updated. Make your website a destination for people. Drive Facebook visitors to your website, not the other way around, and your social media. Try not to rely too much on email for everything. You know, put your information on your site. Put links from your emails, your marketing emails, or your announcement emails back to the site, so you have a single source of truth for your content that your members will really appreciate that when you decide to change the location of something or the time of something, and they're still going on an email that they had in their inbox from 2 months ago. So those are some of the things.
How do you know if you're successful? I mean, you've got these goals, and other than somebody saying, "Oh, I found your church because you know of your website," you know, maybe meeting the members' needs. How do you gauge how you're doing?
Yeah. So the good news about that is, in my experience, if you've done something wrong, you're going to hear about it without even asking. But being attentive to, you're not going to get it right the first time. There are things I could sit here and probably go on about the CTL site that we did 4 years ago that I know need to be changed. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a list of things that are going to be changing in the next incarnation.
Constant evaluation.
Exactly. When you launch your site,
phase two, phase three, phase four.
When you launch your site, you're going to basically begin the next version of the site.
Journey.
You're going to start to find out what worked and what didn't, and you have to listen. That's not to say that every concern someone brings up is something you have to incorporate, because they're not all good concerns. they can be edge cases that there's nothing that can be done about. But you're going to see patterns develop. You know, I was at a basketball game for my son recently, and so a woman I was sitting next to was talking to me, and she pulled up the phone. She was up the site. She didn't know I did the site. She pulled it up, and she's like, whenever I come on here, I have a hard time finding. And of course, I'm like, I don't know who designed that. You know? But I made a mental note. You know,
sure.
I said, so she's having trouble finding this in the school program events or whatever it was. You're going to find those things out. You have to be attentive to them, and you have to understand that when a site launches, you're beginning the next incarnation of design and development right then and there.
Well, how about any resources that you might recommend for congregations or schools?
Sure. So, you know, obviously, I always encourage churches to look inward to, you know, for people in the congregation that might have exposure to, you know, being more technically savvy. Maybe you have a web developer in your congregation. That would be wonderful to get them involved. People really do want to contribute to their ministries, and they want to do it in a way that they feel qualified to do. So always open it up to people in the congregation that are willing and able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need that support anyway. But there are a lot of tools. Wix and Squarespace, if you don't have any background in web design or development or have anyone available to you, those are perfectly viable options. They are templated sites that can get you up and running. They give you enough tools. There's enough, you know, support in terms of documentation for how to get up and running. Mm-hmm. Those are viable options, and if your budget, you know, can support it, I highly recommend those things. There are some church similar services that are geared specifically towards churches, so ecclesia360.com. Tithely is another one. Final Web, who there's probably a number of people familiar with Final Web. Those are all tools, too, that are available that are geared specifically towards churches. And you might find a little more, you know, guidance from those tools because they are built specifically for churches. For a little more self-starters, you can go the WordPress route, wordpress.com or wordpress.org. Themeforest.net, if you're looking for templates for WordPress and you want to get up and running. Those are some good And we can, I assume we have show notes that we can, you know, link to all these things. Okay, so I don't want to tell you to write this down. But I would definitely check those out if there are, if you are more of a self-starter, you can do a little bit more with WordPress sites than you can do with some of these templated things. So depending on the size of your congregation, your ministry, and what you determine that your site needs to be, WordPress might be a good option for you. And finally, stock photography. You know, you might, lightstock.com is an excellent resource. Share Faith is another one for churches. You don't, if you don't have graphic designers in your congregation, and you need some, you know, quality resources, those things do exist too.
Very good. Jim, thanks for taking some time with us. That's, I think that's a question on the heart of every congregation. You know, are we using this effectively, or, you know, what's the next step, or what could it do for us that it's not?
Very true.
So, yeah. Great information. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Our thanks to Tim for taking some time to do that with us. It's nice to get, first of all, a fresh perspective. I was just introduced to Tim through the interview process. So his insights are fresh to me. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of groundbreaking stuff there, but just some great common sense and some good perspectives. And I think easy to follow suggestions and processes that every congregation or school could consider, and super helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And as Tim was gracious enough to share links to different things, you can check out the Wells Tech website at wellstech.wells.net for all of those links. Tim sent me a laundry list, and there was some that I wasn't familiar with. I always like it when that happens. In particular, towards the end of the interview, he was sharing different stock media resources. And this one, sharefaith.com, was new to me, Martin. I don't know if you'd heard of that one before yourself. Looks like they have all kinds of offerings. And it's obviously, it's not a free place, but you can get a free trial and check it out. But they've covered a lot of bases here, from streaming to media and websites and management software and all kinds of things. So knowing that Tim recommends the media offerings, I think it's very well worth our time to spend some time digging into this website. So hopefully soon enough, I'll be able to check it out and give you a more thorough review of it.
Yep. And we're excited that Tim has joined our ranks and is working on some good stuff. He's working with the team, Julie Duran, in our web services group on our 100 missions in 10 years. Launch. So look for that in the very near future, about a splash page and some other things that they're going to be doing to promote that. And then maybe the biggest project of all, kind of taking a big look at wells.net, our main web presence, and figuring out what's the next step in its evolution. So a lot of good stuff to come.
Seems like we just got that new Wells.net website. I can't believe it's time to look again, but that's the nature of web, folks. And
it is.
And it's true of your church and school websites as well. You know, you kind of constantly need to be revising and renewing and refreshing, and don't let it get stale.
Yep. All right. Let's move along. Ministry resources. I thought a nice thing to remind people of, and I think I've referenced this in the past, is a document that we worked up here in our office called General Information Security Guidelines. Part of a web presence is sometimes collecting information, and sometimes collecting personally identifiable information through forms. And it's helpful to know some do's and don'ts about the privacy of that data, what applies to things like GDPR, like we've talked about in the past. Are you collecting social security numbers or credit cards or date of birth or even email and those kinds of things? What can and can't you ask? What can and can't you keep and store? And if you are storing it, how do you store it? Does it need to be on an encrypted drive or site, et cetera, et cetera? So we put together these general guidelines, information security guidelines, with links to different things, and hopefully they might help you figure out if you're doing things correctly or not with use of emails and privacy policies and different links you can click on to learn more and also get more help. So we will put that link in the show notes as a ministry resource, and just kind of part of the package is the whole privacy of the data you collect. So take a look at that if that is something that you haven't thought about or would like some guidance on.
Good stuff, Martin. Really important for our congregations and schools to pay attention to that, I'm guessing. We wouldn't want to be caught with, you know, exposing people's data, obviously.
Yeah. And obviously there's potential lawsuits, but I think damage to reputation is probably the largest, you know, ding that a congregation or school might suffer as a result of data loss or those kinds of things that you should be easy enough to take care of. You just need to be intentional about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move along, Sally, to our picks of the week.
And I will go first, sharing a reading resource this week. This is a book that I'm currently working through called Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time. Wow, who doesn't want to do twice the work in half the time? That would be a really a good thing to achieve. And Scrum is something that we've adopted in our technology office, but that is becoming more and more mainstream across all different types of industries and certainly could apply to a task you're trying to accomplish in a church or school setting as well. The idea behind it is that you take small chunks of work and commit to getting them done in a certain period of time. And by doing it iteratively like that, you can discover new things about what the needs are rather than just having this huge picture overview that you spend a lot of time on. And then as you develop it, things change and it doesn't even happen the way the big picture you envisioned at the beginning, spelled out. This book in particular is more of a, it's not a how-to book. It's more of almost like storytelling about people that have used Scrum. And right away, it digs into security type things with the U.S. government and how they were trying to address the needs that came out of the 9/11 event in 2001, and that all these different areas of intelligence and things knew things, but they never could pull it up. Big picture because they didn't have consolidated systems to allow them to do that. And really interesting read about kind of the behind the scenes of how the systems finally came into production after literally millions of dollars and man hours spent. But when they kind of got simple with it and did small chunks at a time using the Scrum methodology, things came together that just were impossible to achieve before that. So really interesting read so far. I will keep you up to date as I make my way through the book. Haven't finished it yet, but am enjoying it, reading it with my team of coworkers here in the Synod. And just for the record, I did get a hardcover paper book, not the Kindle version. So highly recommend paper.
Yeah. I didn't even get the Kindle version. I got the audiobook version. Oh. So.
There you go.
I read through this, I don't know, a couple of years back, and it is, you know, it's pretty short too. It's not a huge treatise. And I think the application you'll find, and you know, as people consider maybe Scrum for their organization, is it really helps in the project management space. If you have trouble finishing projects or just kind of knowing which end to grab and how to proceed, this helps with a very straightforward, simple methodology for getting stuff done. So I think that's one of its greatest assets. All right. My pick of the week is actually, I tend to give more love to the Mac users sometimes in my picks of the week than the Windows users, but not today, Sally.
Okay.
RoboCopy is my pick of the week. And it is simply a command line application that is available for all Windows machines. It's built right in. And it is far faster than using the Explorer to work with your files. You just have to get comfortable with command lines. And I'll tell you in a minute why that isn't such a big deal for my use case. But I think RoboCopy was really meant for speed when they built it, you know, from the ground up. There's all kinds of flags and options and those kinds of things, but it'll copy files, move files. It will especially work nicely with large files or mass quantities of files, which those of you that have used Windows for a long time, I'm sure have come across times where you think, boy, this should not take this long to copy over these 100 files or 500 files. And this is really the solution. One of the great reasons why Robocopy is useful for me is because it provides a way to back up a Windows machine. The built-in backup software that comes with Windows is kind of being, you know, pushed into the background. It's actually very hard to find now, especially with Windows 11. And even with Windows 10, I didn't think it was that easy to use. But I was looking for a backup solution for backing up my Windows laptop and came across a nice blog article that talks through how to use Robocopy to set up especially incremental backups. And incremental, and everybody should obviously be backing things up, but incremental backups really only back up the things that have changed. So you can, this blog post walks you through using Robocopy to set up a full backup, but then incrementally back up throughout the week. So it's not backing up the whole thing, but just things that have changed. And it's super fast, and you set it up through scripts. So you really don't have to be super technical. It walks you through how to create a script and how to automate that. So it just happens in the background, and you just need an external drive or a storage area network of some kind on your network if you want to do it that way. But so big fan of Robocopy, super fast and built right in. So you don't really have to buy backup software, backup solution. And this would be for local backups. You still probably want some offsite backups in some way, shape, or form. And there are different ways to do that too. But big fan of Robocopy, built right in. Who knew? And it's been around for a while and works super well. That's my pick.
So I'm going to just label this show Geek Happiness, because that is somewhat geeky, Mr. Spriggs. That is,
yes, it is.
That takes a little bit of hacking behind the scenes, it looks like, but nice to have the clear instructions in that blog post you found.
Yeah, it's super simple. Don't be afraid of it.
Okay. And then you can kind of fix it and forget it. Just check to make sure they happened.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not have to worry about it. So that's a good thing.
Let's move on to community news and feedback.
Sure. I'm actually going to kind of commandeer this section of the show and use it to talk about something really exciting that I was a part of this past Saturday. We had mentioned it on previous podcasts that the Christ in Media Institute out of Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato was going to be putting on a festival. And this is actually a long anticipated festival. I think they actually planned it for the spring of 2020 and have had to punt for a couple of years. So finally, they've pulled together this vision that they had of an XR festival. And XR is kind of an acronym that's meant to encompass all types of different realities. Mm-hmm. So we have virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality. They call it extended reality with the X feature. And I actually learned about all three of those. So I'm a lot more educated about all those different types of realities that are out there now. The day kicked off with Dr. Brian Klebig, who's a professor at Bethany Lutheran Seminary and College. He teaches in both areas. And he had a really informational kind of background knowledge type session where he talked about the different types of reality. And he actually started with all of history and how the church has been poised to really take advantage of different communication revolutions over time, even going back to when Moses was in Pharaoh's household learning the language of the day and hieroglyphics and things, and how that prepared him for the work he had. And obviously moving forward to Martin Luther and the printing press. But then Brian stopped at today's communication revolution with all kinds of media and how maybe we haven't capitalized as much as a church on television and film, and now all this different gaming, and then even further, the extended reality stuff. And so kind of food for thought, good history, good perspective there. What I learned was virtual reality is different than film and television and Zoom calls and all those kind of things where you can multitask. Virtual reality is a completely immersive experience where you see what you see through the goggles. And so that gives it different powers and things when you have that immersive experience. It also maybe lends to it not being just an all-in, fully accepted thing because people aren't ready to give up all of their power to a set of goggles or whatever. So then you come into the augmented reality. And I think we've all maybe experienced this with things like, I know the Target app, you can put a piece of furniture in your room and see what it looks like using
IKEA,
your phone.
Yeah,
He gave examples of pointing your phone at a sign in a different language and it translating for you. Those kind of things are augmented reality. Mixed reality was the one that I should back up. In augmented reality, you can obviously use it for more utility type things and small things that you want to put in people's perspective. Mixed reality, he feels like, is kind of a marriage of the two. And the best example he gave was like glasses, where things are projected on the glasses. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that movie Ready Player One, where they would bring up things and see it in front of them on their glasses. And Brian actually felt like this was an area that's going to grow quite a bit, where you can have additional information available to you in your view. So somewhat the augmented reality, but more seamless and more realistic as you're seeing the world through the glasses. So anyway, again, kind of good background knowledge there, and something that he feels like we obviously should be paying attention to as a church body. The day moved on then, Martin, to some showcases where really neat component of Christ in Media efforts has often been involving area Lutheran high schools and just helping them to put their hands on some of these equipment and ideas around using today's media for gospel outreach. And there were several high schools that participated. Some were able to be at the conference, others participated kind of remotely, and they had really neat experiences. They gave each of the high schools an Oculus headset, which is one of the more affordable virtual reality headsets, and kind of challenged them to see what they could develop. And it was really neat to see these students. There were probably, I don't know, maybe 15 or so at the conference from different high schools. Shout out to Northland and Luther High and St. Croix, who sent students to the conference. I think that was a neat experience for them. And actually, one of the door prizes was an Oculus headset, and one of the students won that. So that was pretty cool as well. Yeah. And then actually a few other people presented, including a couple of friends of Wells Tech, believe it or not. Pastor Rob Gunther from New Ulm, Minnesota, was there in person, and he talked about work he's done with his catechism class with virtual reality headsets, where he's put them in biblical historical places and things like that. Even just with Google Earth and an app called Wander that's using Google Earth, they're able to go and see the churches that are in places in Israel where the nativity is supposed to have been, or things like that. You know, in real time, they can go there and feel that experience of being there. And he had an interesting piece of software called Grove that he plans to use to monitor multiple virtual reality headsets. Rob's writing for grants and trying to put together a collection of these so he can do summer camps and things like that. So you can bet Wells Tech will be there if Rob puts on a virtual reality summer camp. I think that would be super cool. And then virtually, we heard from missionary Mike Hartman, who's recently accepted a call to serve in London. He and his family are working through moving to London, and he wasn't able to be there in person, but he did share some of the development he's been involved in of actually historic sites in virtual reality. So being able to walk through the temple and see what it actually looked like and things like that in 3D, in real time kind of thing. So I really need to hear from Mike. He had a couple of book recommendations, Martin. I don't know if you want to take note. Maybe we'll look into some of these for future Wells Tech reading. One was called Writing on the Wall, and it's by a man named Tom Sandish, I want to say. I don't have my notes up in front
Standish,
of me.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the other was something called Brand Luther by Andrew Pettigrew. And so both recommended by Mike as we look to the future and these media that are available to us. So one more shout out. I got to meet in person Pastor Dominic Olson. Wells Tech listeners may remember Dominic from last spring when he was approaching graduation from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, and he actually did his thesis on virtual reality, and we had him on the show and talked about his thesis and everything, and he was there in person participating in the day as well. So just all in all, of course, a wonderful day put on by Dr. Tom Custer. He's the leader behind the Christ in Media Institute and always such a visionary in regard to media and ministry. Yep. So I was excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, our thanks to Dr. Tom. I think that is a love affair he has with the getting kids together to use technology or think about the use of technology in ministry. Mm-hmm. So, and which is what we're all about. So
he even just right there in the moment was encouraging students to come up and tell about other projects they were involved right. in and telling them, you know, how important it was for them to develop the public speaking skills and that it's not so scary to, so, you know, there were so many different things in play in the conference. It was a neat experience.
Neat. Thanks for being there for representing Wells Tech.
Oh, pleasure.
That's going to about do it, Sally, for this week. Just a reminder to our listening and viewing audience, wellstech.wells.net is our show notes page. All the stuff that we talk about from day one, episode one, is all there somewhere. Searchable, usable. Well, I don't know. Maybe the first year of stuff isn't as usable as the last year of stuff, but there's good stuff there. So feel free to go and add your comments there or explore any of the social media tools that we have or locations that we frequent to give us feedback, suggestions for interviews, for topics, all those things we'd really love to hear about. Next time we meet, we are going to welcome another CMMer. Pastor James Beringer is going to join us and talk about tech in prison ministry. So stay tuned for that and some of the great opportunities and needs that they have in special ministries. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.